Fade in.
Cut to.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action.
Everyone, thank you, thank you, thank you. You are about to watch Restaurant Fiction's first live panel at Los Angeles Comic-Con 2023. We were invited, and we thank all the powers that be for letting Restaurant Fiction, for letting us bring the world of fictional reviews, of fictional restaurants, bars, and clubs, and TV and film to the Los Angeles Comic-Con and the Comic-Con community. We brought three of our friends, three amazing previous Restaurant Fiction guests. They are none other than Richard Haddam, Donick Carey, Duff Goldman. You will learn more about them at this amazing live panel. So I keep on saying live panel. Oh, and who am I? My name is Manas Rose. I am the host. But anyway, this live panel, that is exactly what you, the listener, you, thank you for listening, are going to get. You're going to get something raw. You're going to get something real. You're going to get, you know, if you weren't there at Los Angeles Comic-Con, well, guess what? Strap in, because you didn't have to be there. We're going to give you the unedited, real deal version. All right. Enough about me. Let's get to brass tacks. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of our first ever Comic-Con panel, Restaurant Fiction style. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining. This is the Restaurant Fiction LA Comic-Con panel. This is my first ever panel, so thank you very much for being here. My name is... Thank you. So, what is Restaurant Fiction? Restaurant Fiction is the show where we review, bless you, where we review fictional restaurants, bars, and clubs in TV and film. Who am I? My name is Manas Rose. I am a chef. I am a screenwriter. I do digital content for the Food Network. And anyway, what I have just done is I just wanted to be the crossroads between TV, film, and food. Anyway, who are my guests today? Well, this is their second go around on Restaurant Fiction. To my left is Richard Haddam. Richard Haddam, most recently, just came off of the DC Universe show Titans. He has also written my favorite chef movie of all time, which is called Under Siege 2: Dark Territory. Anyway, whereas Die Hard is the Christmas movie, Under Siege 2 is definitely that chef movie. He was a screenwriter of The Mothman Prophecies. To my right, we have Mr. Donick Carey. Donick Carey, obviously, yes. He is fantastic in several ways. He has written some of my favorite Simpsons episodes, including the Mr. Sparkle episode. He has written for The New Girl. I mean, honestly, he has directed, I just want to get this right.
Parks and Recreation.
Welcome to Flash.
Recently canceled.
But the Paul Feig.
Still available, though?
Still available on probably Hulu. I don't know. But Welcome to Flash. Yeah, we did a couple seasons. A pandemic show. Interesting time to make stuff, but
I'm dying to see that.
It's fun. It's fun, and now it's done.
but I think
fun
more
and done.
Fun and done.
It's like sex, right? It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. It's already getting R-rated.
Yeah, there's no there's no HR. There's no corporate gentlemen. There's no corporate in this room right now. So by all means,
Yeah, just raise your hand if something's making you uncomfortable, and we'll talk about something else.
Absolutely. And then finally, to my right over here is Mr. Duff Goldman himself.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. He is the host of Ace of Cakes on the Food Network. Also, I mean...
That was canceled like 8 years ago. Longer than that.
Yeah. He has a slew of kids baking cookbooks. He is on all kinds of Food Network shows, including... The most recently aired, I believe it's called
The Elf on the Shelf
Suite. Elf on the Shelf Suite Showdown. Oh, it is like an Elf on the Shelf themed show, and it is hilarious. Like, the elves caught, like, make messes. You know, like the elf, you know, they're in your house and they're messing with stuff, or you find them. And so they completely trash the studio, and then we, through pastries, have to sort of clean up their messes.
Love
it's
it.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
It's good. It's magic.
So I asked before coming on, you know, what each of the guests will. Except you, Donick, and we're going to figure that one out. But I asked at least Rich and, and Duff, you know, their favorite fictional restaurant. And so anyway, there is definitely a fictional restaurant in Rich's show, Titans, which is called the Elk Ghost Diner. Yeah. And then obviously I asked Duff, and Duff's favorite diner is from the Big Lebowski. And so we're going to combine. And then also then Donick, he did a documentary called Have a Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics. So, you know, we're gonna infuse that. And plus, he just came out also with another documentary called Hail to the Breadsticks. So we're gonna throw in some stuff with that. How Restaurant Fiction is gonna go is gonna do a little fictional review, and we're just gonna get into questions.
Sounds like a great plan.
I love it.
Love it. Let's do this.
If there's no objections, let's get going.
All right, cool.
I brought you some guava jelly from our guava tree that my wife Kim, let's hear for Kim.
Yeah.
Made a whole bunch, but this is fresh guava jelly from our house with a lemon from our house also. So it's all backyard finds, but that's for you.
Oh, that's
not
nice.
To kill the momentum, but no, I had to deliver the guava.
It's good. I mean, all three of you are going to have my cheesecake. I do make the best. Cheesecake, yeah, Duff.
You've
never,
do you?
You've never had. You've never. No, no disrespect, Duff, but of all of yeah,
he does make very good cheesecake. We've had it, and I would suggest making a guava cheesecake. We have a lot of guava left over.
Well, we'll talk.
Let's try.
We'll talk,
and everyone's invited.
All right.
Yeah. Mm. Perfect.
All right.
All right. Sorry.
So it doesn't matter if you're on psychedelics or not when you go to a diner, okay? And it doesn't matter if it's a sci-fi diner, or it doesn't matter if it's a diner in Miracle Mile. That's right. But, you know, for Restaurant Fiction, we recommend it because, you know, one of the things that happens when you're in a diner, a Greasy Spoon, is things appear kind of weird, to where it's almost as if the Washington Commanders logo resembles deep-fried mozzarella breadsticks, but that's – I digress. Anyway, now let's talk more specifics about fictional diners. Let's now talk about the Elk Ghost Diner and this Miracle Mile coffee shop. Okay, well, on one end of the spectrum, you got a caterpillar parked in a desert. It's complete with a backdrop of wind turbines doing their lazy dance. The other – is a retro spaceship, you know, that Googie style gem, if you will. You got the cars and all of that. Basically, these are time capsules. These time capsules are, in a way, cozy purgatories. They're, you know, places where you can think about your next move, or you can just think about what to do with a toe. You know, I'm just saying. So anyway, here's the kicker. So these diners, if you will, these coffee shops, it's not about the caffeine kicks or those lingonberry pancakes that you just might find fruitier than your uncle's holiday sweater. These diners are slices of normalcy. You know, they're a familiar comfort soup with a side of not quite like home. They're the perfect soft landing pads to when you want that really nice come down after 200 milligrams. One footnote. If you ever wonder why, though, a lot of moody teenagers go to the don't actually eat, I guess, at the Elk Ghost Diner. Well, it turns out they're actually more interested in high-rise, insta-worthy rooftop eateries. Go figure. Anyway, that is my quick review. It's a very weird hodgepodge review. I know usually we do just one establishment, but we are combining the DC Universe Diner with Donick's psychedelics and Duff's love of Big Lebowski. Okay, gentlemen, what did you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, okay, to give a little context –
The Elko's Diner in Titans, which is on HBO Max, was sort of an amalgamation of a few ideas, but it was basically Jeff Johns, who is known to anyone who's a fan of DC. He had an overriding theme and sort of an interest when he wrote the pilot with Akiva Goldsman and Greg Berlanti. And the idea was, this takes place in the real world. Okay, so we want the characters and the locations to be recognizable, and we want to sort of push the idea that you could be anywhere in America, walk into a place, and there's Nightwing, there's Raven, there's Beast Boy. And so in one of the early episodes, there was a diner that was not the Elko Diner, but he and I were writing the episode together, and I slugged it interior diner day. And he said, oh no, it's not just diner. Give it a thing. Like, what's one of the weirdest diners you've ever been in? Like, this is a place that people in that neighborhood go to all the time. Let's just give it a thing. I'm like, well, like, what are the Bulldog Diner? He's like, great, Bulldog Diner. At least, and he says, when you do that, now the production designer knows what to do. He's going to put a sign with a bulldog. And there's going to be the Bulldog Burger. That'll be the fourth line in your scene, is someone ordering that, you know? And maybe there'll be, you know, dog dishes. Maybe people bring their dogs to the Bulldog Diner. But just make it super specific. And it just makes everyone's job easier. And I'm like, well, you know, he's absolutely right. So based on that, literally for the rest of the next four seasons, every time we wrote a location, it was never just a store or a restaurant or a thing. It was a very specific thing that almost feels real. And Elko Diner came from that. It was something that we all liked. And then the Elko Diner actually became sort of a supernatural location that didn't exist in our real world and that had sort of its own physical doppelganger in another world. And it was pretty soon we were all just fighting to write scenes that took place in that diner.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. All right.
I mean, the thing about diners, right? Well, the thing about acid, really, is that, I mean, when do you take acid, right? Usually, I don't know, in the afternoon, you're like, okay, it's like I woke up, I had some coffee, it was breakfast, did whatever I had to do that day. Then you eat some acid, right?
And rest of the day's open. Right. I hope you're like, oh, the schedule's pretty open.
Right. Like, right. Okay, yeah, today's a good day, right? And then, so, you know, you trip your face off for, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours, whatever it is.
Yep.
And then, you know, it's the wee hours, right? It's the witching hours. It's the time of night when bad things happen. You're coming down. What's open? Diners are open. That's where you go. You get, like, you know, so you end up in a diner. You kind of wash up. You're like, you and your buddy, you know, and you're just like, oh man, I need some Lincolnberry pancakes. You know, like you get, or like the other thing I love about diners is that the menus are this thick and there's like a billion items. Like you can get Salisbury steak, you can get pot roast, you can get French toast, you can get spanakopita, right? You can get all kinds of stuff. Plus there's a case of rotating pot, right? Yeah. So you get all that. Okay. And then, you know, and you're just like, yes, this is what I need to get myself back, you know, on the ground.
It's two things though. Like, The massive menu has the possibility of breaking your brain because that's almost too much. That's almost overwhelming.
Yeah.
But in general, a diner is a very grounding, safe, like universal. They're everywhere and they are timeless. It mm-hmm. feels like it'll go on forever. So maybe you've been on a journey somewhere where you're like not sure and you're looking for that grounding influence. A diner will do it. I did find shooting the movie, if we can jump a little bit, that McDonald's is like a hybrid diner grounding place. But a lot of people in the movie had very bad trips and ended up at a McDonald's thinking like they're in Amsterdam. And then if we can just get to a McDonald's, it'll bring us back to some kind of reality we understand, even if that reality is weird and corporate and kind of an evil empire. Anyway, at least it's one we know.
But it's like a bait and switch though, man. When you like, have you had McDonald's in another country?
Yes.
The same.
Oh yeah.
True. It's not the same, right? If you had to catch up in England. Gross.
Right.
It's gross.
We were in Malmo, Sweden, going like, well, I guess McDonald's for breakfast. This will be great. Not great. Not great at all.
There was a McDonald's in Paris that I went to when my children were very small.
Yeah.
And so it was like, great, we'll just, this is a place where they will eat some food and it won't cost that much. And we went in there. And I don't remember the differences about the menu, but I do remember there was a Ronald McDonald guy sitting at the table with a cigarette.
Oh, jeez. Ominous.
Talking to an attractive young woman and her small child. I just thought, well, this is what I'm here for.
You look like Marcel Marceau, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, and to bring it back to Restaurant Fiction, I mean, gentlemen, I mean, the opening scene of Pulp Fiction is all about McDonald's, and it's all about McDonald's in either Belgium and right. France.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I thought you were going to say the opening scene in the diner.
Oh, and that, too.
And the diner.
And the stick him up. And
yeah,
the
it does
him
both.
Up. Yeah, the, yeah.
Nice. I mean the, and talk about what you did, what he did with the diner, giving it a theme of just make it something. Oh, this is a place where they do rock and roll and dance, and everything can happen within in the,
oh,
the
that,
later
oh my
the
God.
Later diner.
Yeah, in, yeah, where they do the fiction, dance.
Jack which Rabbit in a way, Slims. Jack Rabbit, what is it called?
Jack Rabbit Slim.
Jack Rabbit Slim. Right, that's right. Yeah.
Which in a way, because I was thinking about in a Simpsons episode I wrote where they go to Tokyo, they go to America Town, which was the same thing, which was like, why don't we just make America Town? Which was a little bit based on a trip we took to China. We got stuck in a dust storm and didn't know what we were doing. And we had been in China for about 30 days. And we're like, there's an Outback Steakhouse. Let's just go to something familiar. And we went in and they had clearly gone to America school to like steakhouse school. And so that was part of America Town, was that they were all like, they had gone to America Town school, learned America through this weird filter, and then were serving you up what they thought you wanted, which was not a very...
What was it like? Like, what was like America? Like, what was
he was like- dressed cowboy style. And they had taken like the 10 things they thought we would want for steak, which was like, Americans like it rare. And they brought the steak that was not cooked. I mean, it was disgustingly raw. And a lot of like thumbs up, like, and I mean, I want to say he was saying something like, way to go, hotshot. He had some catchphrase. It was like, way to go, hotshot. Here's your steak. Right on. And you're like, what's happening? This is disgusting. We just wanted, some semblance of home. But we tried to make the Simpsons something like that, where it's like both off-putting and a little taste of slice of home, which is what home should be.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, I do want to ask you guys a question, though. For the uninitiated, does food taste different on acid?
You don't want it.
Really?
I don't think you want to deal with it, because it does. It's like opening this other portal to your insides, which is something you don't really want to think too much about when you're connecting with bigger things. You asked, what did you ask? Besides your dream fictional restaurant, what would be your fictional restaurant where the theme is psychedelics? What I was thinking with that was it would probably have to be candy based, because all you want maybe is some sweets, sours, pop rocks, things that are like very temporary and superficial, that like are like a sensory experience, rather than like, you don't want to be filled up. You don't want to be like, I need a hearty meal when you're.
Yeah, it's not appealing.
But I also feel like it works well with the diner, because it is that time warp. So it's like, you feel that other dimension. You can hear the flies buzz, the oldness, the staleness of the air. You can.
Yes. I don't know what diners you're going to. The stale air and the flies are not my first priority.
I think there would be a lot of, like, when you're talking about the menu too, if there's a lot of like cherry pie, what is cherry pie or whatever? Mm. Let's get a slice. And then there'd be a lot of like looking at it and doing a lot of like, think about where the journey that cherry took from inception to getting here in this pie. And now we're poking at it. And now we're just going to throw it out. Oh, my God, that's so sad. Or that's so amazing. You know, you'd be having sort of big thoughts, not let's eat a cherry
like
pie.
Analyzing the texture of like, wow, like this crust is like super flaky. And like, this is where the butter was. And this is where the flour was. And like, here's this cherry. And it's like perfectly cooked.
Together.
And it's encapsulated in this goo that's starch based, you know, like you know.
Yeah, and aren't we all just cherries suspended in goo? Is that? And you'd start to have those kind of conversations rather than eating the pie.
Yeah. It'd be great. Let's do it. What are you doing? Like?
Let's do it. We're gonna take acid if you want to join us and go to a diner. Sounds like.
I mean, I kind of do. I've never done it. So, there's a point in my future where I do want to do it. My wife says I'm not allowed until I'm 65.
Great.
I assume, because at that point my brain can rot and, you know,
yeah, you're get heading towards Alzheimer's. You might as well have some fun, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm of no use to anyone at that
Kabbalah,
point.
Right? You can
but, I mean, is that, would you, dead serious, would you recommend going to a diner your first time on acid, or should it be a little bit more like in a therapist's office with some calm music?
This is a funny thing because I made a movie about taking acid, and people often come to me for expert advice, and I'm like, I was looking for jokes and comedy, how funny it is. But the real answer is everybody's brain's built differently. Everybody needs different things at different times. I think what's nice about where we are with psychedelics right now is we're having a pretty rational conversation about how they can help with PTSD, anxiety, with bigger mental health issues. This is a very personal space. So I would not recommend you take a hit of acid and go to a diner and see what happens. I do like the idea of, instead of taking up golf or watching lots of baseball, that retirement is a place for like psychedelic travel. Like, that seems like a great hobby and learning bigger truths and maybe exploring stuff. It's a great retirement plan. It's like, you know what? We're going to go out and find stuff, find out what the meaning of the universe is. But I would say there are also a lot of tools now, therapeutic tools, people who will assist. There's a lot of books to read, a lot of documentaries to watch, et cetera, where you can really understand the landscape and then figure out what is helpful to you.
Get like an eighth of mushrooms, the two of you split it, go to a state park, and have a great time.
That's also great.
Right.
So
it'd be great.
Gentlemen, bringing it back.
Yeah.
All right. So bringing it back. All right.
Why am I all of a sudden the psychedelic expert?
Guys, can I ask you
a cake decorator?
I have a question, though, really quick. That guy over there, he is in costume, right?
Nope. Just for a second, talking about psychedelics cake. There's a great story on the internet. Jerry Garcia eats a cake that was dosed. It's hilarious. We were going to put it in the movie, and then we're like, it's out on the internet already. But you should watch that. Somebody dosed a cake with 500 hits of acid. And Jerry, right before he goes on stage, was like, I bet someone dosed that, but the cake looks so good. And he couldn't help himself. Like Homer Simpson was like, I'm just going to have one little, ooh, this is really good. He ate a huge piece of cake. He gets on stage, and he's like, ah, shit. And he tells this story about, it's like the one time he took too much acid and had to play. And what happens to him on stage is he's playing and everyone's looking at him. He's like, they're all looking at me. And he's like, they're going to kill me. Oh my God, I got to play for my life. And so he played this set that's like, he's playing to get out of there alive. It's a great story. As part of that, we ended up making a psychedelic cake. My son Otis, who's here today. Hi, Otis. Was maybe six when we were shooting the movie, and we had this, we called him Captain Good Trips. He's in a little white tuxedo, and he shows up a few times in popping up with Fred Willard. The two of them show up with advice in the movie. And at one point, we baked a big psychedelic cake. It was a tie-dye within the cake. It was tie-dye.
Okay.
And just for fun, when we were shooting with Otis, we're like, go nuts, have fun with the cake. So we shot on a green screen. Otis at eight, he could do anything he wanted with a cake. He just eating it, whatever.
And it was filled with acid.
And he's still tripping.
He's doing great.
He's hanging in there, playing for his life.
When Fred Willard, by the way.
One of the greatest talents of all time.
How much you think I could bench press?
He's incredible. All love to Fred Willard. Man.
Wait, Duff, how would you make a psychedelic cake?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I think like the fun thing about what I do is I get to make cakes that look like other things, right? So it's like I'll make a cake that'll look like a car or an elephant or this bottle of water, you know, or something. And like I think what's fun is like, you know, making that kind of stuff, and then you really have to have like a philosophical discussion about whether or not to eat it. Right. Because I just spent like all this time making a cake that looks like, you know, a NASCAR. And now it's, you know, like took like seven people a week and a half to do. So, you know, over 100 man hours, you know, going into this thing. And now what do we do? Do we eat it? Do we not eat it? It's beautiful, but like it's still a cake. And I feel like to fulfill its purpose, right? Its cakeness. If you don't eat it, it's not a cake.
Yeah.
It's right. Just a sculpture.
Right.
You absolutely.
Know, that happens to be made out of sugar, right? But you got to eat that thing.
And then the best part of the experience has to be the flavor of the cake.
100%. 100%. They got to be good, man.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to cut it, especially,
take this thing that we took all this time making and it's just, you know, amazing and hand-painted. And then you cut it open because you want to, you know, not let the cake down and, you know, let it fulfill its purpose. And then you take a bite and it sucks. Like, what a letdown.
Do you remember when you would go to the supermarket and they had those cellophane wrapped cookies that were like in the shape of Snoopy? And it was just that light sort of chalky icing. And they always looked so fun, but they were the worst tasting cookies you ever had because they just tasted like cardboard. But they were like cartoon character, like little shapes or Woodstock or something. Do you remember those?
I don't, but there's many beautiful confections that you go like, oh. They spent way much more time on the art than the on the flavor.
But think about this though. Like, have you ever had banana milk?
Yeah, I love
Like Nestle I do love it. Banana milk. I love banana milk too.
I'm with you.
It's disgusting, but it's delicious. You know what I mean? Like everybody's got something that's like disgusting but delicious, right? Like, I don't know. What's in the, what was that?
Well, eggnog, just the concept of eggnog.
Eggnog, sure. Yeah. Eggnog, right? Eggnog. But there's so many things out there. What? What's a Malort?
Malort, the whiskey from Chicago, smells like death.
And right.
It has like the weirdest aftertaste that you see like 7 seconds after you drink it. It's like fermented socks, and like it's on the website. It's like fermented socks.
Right, but that's the thing that you're like, this is gross. Like, you taste something gross. Like, oh, man, oh, I'll taste that. Right? Like, it's like the first you want to share it. You know, yeah.
Oh, smell this. Yeah. You're like, why would I smell it?
You just do that. Why did I smell it? Food's funny.
Food's funny. Yeah.
It is. All right, so picture this. Let's role play. I am now the head of a studio, president of production, right? Okay, I am giving you ample amounts of money to do whatever you want. It could be scripted, unscripted, doesn't matter, but it has to be about your own dream fictional restaurant. That's it. Could be a movie, a TV show, but it's your own. What does that dream fictional restaurant look like? It'd be past, present, sci-fi, superhero. It could be whatever you want.
I would do a I don't know if I'm saying this word right, a caravanserai on the Silk Road, like 1100s, maybe in like Kurdistan. Because think about it. That show writes itself. Every day you got new people coming through there, right? You got like a, here's a camel train from China, or here's like a bunch of Venetians, or oh, look, it's Marco Polo showed up. Yay, right? And then you get to like write a whole episode just about that. Plus, like, you'd always have donkeys. There would be donkeys in every episode. Every episode. Sorry, was that?
No, that's great. That was amazing. I want to come to that dinner.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
I would add, I think it could be this setting, so I'm just adding to it. But I've always loved the – we had one dinner early on when we moved out here 20 years ago. Big Night had just come out. We were like, let's have a Big Night dinner. We put a big table in the backyard, and we cooked it. Everyone, we projected Dolce Vita on the wall behind and just ate and hung and played music. And I always just love that, which seems like your caravan. It's a big outdoor table. Yeah. There's many courses. I'm not sure how that's in a restaurant setting, but I've always wanted to do an event where then you add a stage in the middle of the table and there's a band playing. I've talked to Yola Tango about doing this, where they have composed a soundtrack for that. So there's 8 courses, 8 songs. And they play the first song, bring out the course, they play, you eat. Next song, et cetera. So I would just add that. But it can be in the caravan setting. I'm fine with that.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm afraid my answer is not as imaginative because I love restaurants. And I would always just be creating something, you know, a place that I wanted to go to. And it occurred to me, I wrote a pilot where there was it was almost like a diner but also a bar. And it was called Pharaoh's, and it was in Portland, Oregon, and it was on Burnside. I mean, I knew where it was and what it looked like, and I knew the mood, and it was, you know, not a lot of bright lighting and just a very comfortable place where this group of people who were not a family, it was like a group of friends and colleagues. And I knew the network was going to say, well, where are they all going to be together? If they all live separately and work separately, where do we ever see them together? And so I created this place where they could, oh, well, this will be their hangout. And then you just go from there. And it's something I've done when I write a lot of times where it's just like, well, why not just trust what I love? Just put what I love on the menu, put what I love there. And then if nothing else, if it ever happens, when I go to that set, it'll be like, oh, I'm very happy here.
Right. We should have a wrap party here.
Exactly.
I will say almost every show I've worked on at some point, there's like, it often comes from a network, you know, it's like, you guys should have a bar where they can all hang out. Just because that makes sense. All the characters could be there.
It makes sense. And it's where you want to be. It's like you're watching television. You're like, you're sort of hanging out with them and it's fun.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, Friends was one of the first places to do the coffee house, and it was in the early 90s. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's like, I wish I had that life. Go to a place, sit on a comfortable couch. It's always available. Mm. The place in that coffee place where you want to sit, you can always sit. No one's ever there. Yep. Yeah. It is
somehow
it's
you part can afford of the fantasy. It, always. Now, you're the network executive. What are your notes on these pitches?
Let's go. No, great. Excellent. First of all, take me through your R&D process and the menu making. Go.
Let's go to Kurdistan. Let's eat some buried goat meat.
Yeah. Take me through your R&D process.
This feels like you're just asking us to create an actual restaurant.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. And then,
so it has nothing to do with a television show.
Yeah, but also, fine, put yourself in your own fictional restaurant. What role are you guys playing? Are you and where on the line are you doing? Are you doing front of the house, back of the house? Are you doing maitre d'? Yeah.
My first thought on that was if there's a restaurant in a show, there's always an episode where your characters end up making a dish there or something, even if they don't work there, because by season 3 or 4, you're like, they got to cook at the restaurant. And then there's a food critic coming. And that food, you don't know who it's going to be. And they're all in that episode about the food critic. I want to be the food critic. That would be so fun.
Nice. They did that on, that literally was like episode 8 of The Bear. They got there.
Right.
That fast.
And flashback, it's on The Odd Couple. It's on The Brady Bunch. Like, it's on everything. Like, at some point.
Yeah, Ratatouille, Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Right. It's everything.
Who's the critic? Yeah. But, yeah. I want to be the critic.
I would be, I would actually be Richie on The Bear. I would be front of house in a suit, greeting people, but also then drifting in back, sort of, you know, bossing them around too, but presiding over things with no real role that involves rushing around or doing anything with precision other than being kind. Yeah,
sure. No knives, nothing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say on the R&D, just because you brought up the bear, season 2, are we in season 2? That's what
they're...
Episode 2, there's a great montage of R&D where I don't know their names. He sends Io out to try food in Chicago, and it's just a montage of her eating all over Chicago. And I'm like, that is every trip I take to a city, is you go and you eat everything. They did a beautiful version of that. But I would do that. Go eat every restaurant, every dish, everywhere.
And the studio pays for it, apparently, because it's R&D for the studio.
Exactly.
All right.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. So have a chef. We have two fantastic writers. What makes writing and cooking a superpower? I put the superpower because we're in Comic-Con.
So I think that, like, when you're a chef, right, like, how do I explain this? So when you're a chef, right, you have to, like, when I eat a Reese's peanut butter cup, right, you bite into it and it's like the chocolate on the outside of the Reese's is a little thicker than, like, the chocolate underneath. Did we talk about this? Do you and I talk about this during Restaurant Fiction?
We did, but go on.
Okay,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
When you bite into like a Reese's and you feel like the different thicknesses of the chocolate there, and then you feel the serration on the edge, and you feel how that pokes you right here, right? And then when you bite into it and the chocolate's like still kind of solid, it hasn't melted yet, and you just get salty peanut butter for a second, and then the chocolate melts, and then it starts getting a little sweeter, and then you kind of chew it up and it just hits you, that peanut butter and chocolate fusion of bliss happens in your mouth, right? I think the same thing with writing, where like the way that I think about taking a bite of food and then trying to figure out, how do I give that to you, right? How do I create that same, like, break down that experience for myself? How do I give that to somebody else? And I think with writing, it's the same thing. The way that there's something in my head and I want to bring you there. And like, this is how I do it. Now, my interpretation of it's going to be my interpretation, right? So the way that you eat a Reese's, you know, maybe eat it sideways, who knows? But like your interpretation of what I'm trying to tell you is going to be whatever it is, but I'm telling my story, right? And I feel like, I don't know, for you guys, it's probably similar.
Well, first of all, you can't explain that without having a bag of Reese's. Everyone here is like, give me a fucking Reese's.
Sorry, yeah, everybody, look under your chairs.
We're good. I would say also as a superpower, there's a moment where I think Jeff Tweedy writes about this in his book about songwriting in a really good way, where there's like, there's a level of creation that you get to that is sort of, I think he says like tapping the divine or something. It's just like this thing that you don't understand where it's coming from. And there's a little bit of a cliche of this bigger thing that funnels. But when you're really writing something good and tapped into a character or a story, it sort of takes over and it's just there. You're not having to produce it. And I feel like that happens in the kitchen often when you're discovering something new, you're onto something and you're cooking. You're like, you know what? It just needs salt, or it just needs, you know what I'm going to add to this is blank. It's not a recipe. It's not, like laid out. It's just now you're tapping into something bigger.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like you're a vessel.
You're a vessel. Yeah. You're just here to deliver this thing. I think that happens to both. And then on the superpower thing, I think food and stories have the ability to lower people's guard, unite people, come together. There's a unifying thing that happens, which in the world today is a superpower. If anyone's able to get people to sit down and break bread together, laugh at something, play music together, those are superpowers.
Yeah, they nailed it. Next question.
If you had a bag of Reese's peanut, that would have been a killer.
Like, I pick it up. Next panel. We'll have it planned.
Yeah.
All right, fine. We'll bring back a little more specific to you, Richard. All right, so.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. Okay. So, all right. You wrote the actual series finale of Titans, okay? All right. The series finale. So, in the Avengers, not Titans, but they end the whole movie, the first one, of course, by everyone eating at a shawarma place. You know, New York is destroyed and let's eat shawarma, okay? In your series finale, you put the teens in like a rooftop, you know, rooftop like restaurant. Okay, so how important is the restaurant in dealing with superheroes and ending a series on a good culinary note?
Well, it was pretty important to us. There were a couple ideas that went into it. One of them was part of the theme of that episode was the sense that one of the characters was going to die, and the entire season had led to it. And we kept trying to bring you down sort of a cul-de-sac where there really was no other choice. So, what's going on?
Is everyone Somebody's okay? making cappuccinos.
Oh, okay. So,
oh, lightsaber.
So anyway, someone in the room suggested, you know, when I went in for surgery that I was really worried I wasn't going to come out of, I made dinner reservations for the following week. Because for me, psychologically, that meant if I have reservations somewhere, I'm going to be alive to go to that restaurant. And I'm like, that's great. That's such a cool idea. So secretly, Dick Grayson goes off and makes dinner reservations. And it's a totally bizarre scene. I mean, you know, Brother Blood is laying waste to Metropolis. And here's Dick Grayson making dinner reservations for the Top of the Mark. Okay, that was originally the specific restaurant it was going to be. And we just love that notion that if we survive on the other side of this, and it even came down to how many people he said were going to be there. Because then you're literally counting to see if he included the person who we think is going to be dead, and he does. And then we pay it off, and they get to have that dinner. And then at that dinner, a lot of the characters sort of explain, I have big news. Here are my immediate plans. Here's what's going to happen. And it's almost like going out to dinner and having your kid say, I've signed up to do a semester abroad or something. And suddenly you're like, wait, what? And it seems in my memory that happens at a meal setting. And so all of those things sort of came together, the reinforcing the notion that these people are family, even though they're not related to each other, and that they are operating as a family and that they have reunited around a table for this final episode before they sort of go off to their separate futures. Seemed like the perfect setting. So that's why we did it.
Beautiful.
Meals, man. Right? Meals are, I don't know, they're like special things happen at meals. You know, big meal, everybody gets together and like, I don't know, everyone gets honest. You know what I mean? It's kind of cool.
Well, that's why restaurant fiction is so important. I mean, yeah, the fictional restaurant, the bar and the club. All right. Is there any Q&A? This is now time to do some Q&A from the audience. Anyone have some questions to ask these legends?
Oh, good. I thought we were going to have to ask the audience questions. So I was like, I don't know if I have any questions.
Go ahead. Yeah, you can project. Absolutely. You can just, yeah, wherever. There's okay. No mic. Yeah.
Using it. Yeah, hello. Introduce myself.
Please.
My name is Daisha from Geek Therapy. How are you doing?
Great.
Yeah, doing nice. Great.
You didn't end up actually saying your role at your fictional restaurant.
Dude, I'm the dishwasher.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, dishwasher?
Yeah, I'm the dishwasher.
Definitely. Wait, right? Yeah. Which is the most important? That is the most important role.
Yeah, I keep it going. I keep it going.
Absolutely. Right?
Let everybody else do the thing. I will make sure that
there's enough. Can function with that. Mm-hmm.
And if it's a caravanserai, I'm probably also like mucking the stables.
Right.
You know, cleaning some rooms, probably like emptying the spittoons if there's spittoons in
mopping
medieval Kurdistan. I don't know.
Got you. Thank you so much. And I actually want to tell you that I have been watching you since I was a little kid. You're one of my inspirations, honestly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. That was really sweet.
I'm actually in the industry, and I'm a baker as well.
Well, so where are you baking? What are you baking? What are you doing?
Right now I'm actually baking from home.
Okay.
COVID,
so what are you good at?
From home. Breads.
Breads?
Breads.
Okay.
Breads. That's my bread and butter.
Awesome.
And I'm watching you too. So all of your Simpsons episodes, I remember specifically that one you're talking about.
Oh, awesome.
The America Town. I remember that specific one. But I just wanted to tell you guys that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Occurred to me while we were talking that there was it wasn't a restaurant, but a fictional dish that I made in Welcome to Flatch that got cut from the episode. It killed me. And it was something I called Candy Mac, and it was macaroni and cheese with candy corns in it. And then there was a layer of I was remembering this when you were talking about the crunch and that there was a mouthfeel aspect. So that's all goo because the candy corns are gonna soften up with the mac and cheese. But then there's a layer of ranch Doritos that's crumbled on top. And so you're having a little bit of that crunch and you're feeling. But we have all the ingredients at home. We've been meaning to make Candy Mac. We were gonna do it when the episode aired. And then somewhere down the line, one of the Uber executive producers is above me, cut it for time. And I was like, no!
Do you remember Cheesy Blasters from 30 Rock?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, with
take
the weird
a hot
cat.
Dog, fold it in a pizza, stuff it with jack cheese. Nobody? You got Cheesy Blasters.
Absolutely.
Anyways, we made – so Meat Cat was the name of the mascot for Cheesy Blasters.
Yeah.
We made a Meat Cat cake for the cast of 30 Rock.
Awesome.
And we didn't tell them, but I rented a food truck. And I made Cheesy Blasters, and it was amazing. Like they were like, we got pizza, got hot dogs, jack cheese, melted it all down. I made cheese bechamel, like poured it in there. Oh my God. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
That is the best.
Yeah. Isn't there a Simpsons thing with the steak stuffed with lobster stuffed with foie gras, like the fanciest food home? I can't remember where it's from, but you probably know better than I.
There is, but I mean, going back even to though, two things. First of all, Donick.
Yes.
I mean, food jokes have always been a thing. Like what? Your first even joke on the David Letterman show was your mashed potato shampoo, wasn't it?
It was one of the first things I wrote there was Dave. There was a viewer mail letter, if anyone remembers how Letterman used to work. But somebody wrote in, Dave, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done with mashed potatoes? And he goes, actually, I did do something. And it flashes to him making a big thing of mashed potatoes. And then he just takes a thing and starts putting it on his head. And you're not sure what that is. But he sits up and now he's got this sort of white afro. And he goes to – then he walks down to NBC payroll. And at the time, Phil Donahue's show, who had white hair, was on. And he goes, Phil Donahue, paycheck. And then they give him his paycheck. And he walks off with his mashed potato head. But it involved but the first thing I really worked on with Dave was like, all right, you got to cover your head with mashed potatoes. And it has to stick. And it has to somehow be. So it was very complicated. Wardrobe was there and hair and makeup. And Dave had hours of mashed potatoes stuck in his head. Anyway, yeah. Yeah.
The fact that it was a Phil Donahue joke is my favorite part.
That's how long we've been at this, but yes. No, food is funny. can't.
Do you remember the Crystal Gravy commercial in Saturday Night Live?
It sounds great.
Anybody Crystal Gravy? You remember, right? Yeah, it was like around the era of like Crystal Pepsi, and then like Saturday Night Live did like Crystal Gravy, and like one of the scenes was like Chris Farley like just guzzling syrup.
Of, like, I mean. The very first sketch I ever wrote, but I wasn't hired anywhere. I was writing a submission for the Letterman show. Was I can't remember what they were called, but it was chewing gum with a burst of mayonnaise. And it was just like, like instead of like sweet, it was like mayonnaise. So the characters were all excited about the mayonnaise. Anyway, but yeah, anything like that. It's like it's supposed to be gross. It's not. It's somebody. Anyway, go ahead. Was number one. Had two things.
Oh well, okay. Well, if you're American Town, I mean, now I feel like Japan just makes everything better. I mean, they take anything that is in America and they just make it better. Yeah. I mean, talk about whiskey. I mean, I can go on and on and on.
No, French food. Well, the last time we were in Japan, it was like, oh, they had decided to make bakeries better, and every corner was like the best patisserie in the world. I'm like, wait, we're in Tokyo. This is insane. But yeah, they're good at everything.
And I feel like pastries is like, you know, because they're so systematic, right? Pastries are very, you know, creating like what's one of the things like I forget what it's called. It's this one French pastry and it's rolled and it's like this, it's bon.
Like millefeuille or something like that.
It's like that.
It's many layers.
It's many layered thing, but you like. Baumkuchen. Thank you. Mm. Yeah. So like. You go to France or you go to Tokyo and the Baumkuchen is like by far some of the best in the world, right? And it is such a specific skill. I think it really sort of like appeals to just the way that like, you know, Japanese culture approaches systems like that, you know?
Yeah. And perfection.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Anyone have one last question? Yes.
Kind of a universal observation. I've noticed, at least at the level of restaurants that I go to, the nicer the restaurant, like if you get behind the veil and see the people actually making it happen, like the waiters, waitresses, maitre d', they can all be pretty. But once you get back there, it's like the toughest people, like on probation, just out of jail types. Maybe that does apply like to the level of restaurant like that you get to, where they also nice people back there again. But like, why do you think that is? That like. I've always noticed that like, the roughnecks are at the nicest restaurants.
Because it's hard. It's hard work.
Hard work, yeah.
Like it is real, honest, manual labor, right? You know, like when you're cooking. Like, and I think one of the things I always tell like people that are going to culinary students, I'm like, go work in a restaurant before you're going to go to culinary school. Make sure you like it because it is just hard work. You know, you got to be kind of a badass. Every line cook has been to jail, every single one of them. You know what I mean? Like it's part of the process.
You are constantly burning yourself and cutting yourself all day. That's just part of your job.
Right.
Is you're going to be burned.
And like getting yelled at by somebody who's been getting yelled at and burned all day. Like you're like right. you're getting yelled at by somebody who's also a complete psychopath.
And it's kind of a gypsy culture, isn't it? I mean, you're kind of, you know, people going from place to place and, you know, you're with one crew and then that disperses, then you're somewhere else and the restaurant closes and you kind of, it's not like you're going and sitting behind a desk for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot like the writer's room, honestly, right?
Yeah, as I was saying, and I'm like, oh, wait, I'm just also
it's a team sport.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You're stuck in this space together. You got to deliver, you know, and work together to get it out. A lot less burning, I think, in the writer's room, at least in my
but you need some. I don't know about your rooms, but
what was it?
Six burns. Nice. Speaking of burning in the writer's room at Letterman, we had this thing. We would order Thursday nights, we would order Chinese food that was like just and watch The Simpsons. We would stop and watch this. This is years ago when you had to watch it on TV. And we would order so much Chinese food, they would send 15 tubs. These like plastic tubs that, you know, that was scorching hot tea in them because they were like, oh, this is like 15 people. And you get these tubs of tea and they were like the plastic was kind of melting because they were so hot. Mm-hmm. And we would do this thing. No one wanted tea. No one cared. Like we had been drinking coffee all day and we're like, all right, 15 tea. What are we going to do? We're going to invent a game. And we invented this game called Tub of Tea. And everyone would shout, Tub of Tea. And then the timer would start and everyone would grab a tea and try to drink it as fast as they could. Boiling hot. tea. And we'd like be screaming and crying and people like dribbling tea happened every Thursday night for 2.5 years that we were at NBC.
That's amazing.
But that feels like it should be a show now. We should do a cup of tea. We could actually sell that. Yeah. There was a parody of it we did also called Bag of Piss, which was we imagined celebrities like Florence Henderson sitting with a giant bag of piss hanging over their head, and they would have to answer questions with this thing would maybe drop in them. We never did that, but if I mean, you know, if you have friends at the Food Network or anyway.
I'm going to text them right now. Yeah. Great idea for a show.
All right. Shout outs, gentlemen. Where can people find you? Where can... with your projects, everything like that.
Oh, let me go first. I'm excited. I'm unemployed and I have nothing.
Yeah, the strike really slowed things down. Yeah, unemployed. If anyone has a show they want to hire, do you have anything you want to plug coming up?
Not at all.
I do have a show that we made 2 years ago. This is the weird time in show business, but called Carol. It's on Netflix. It's called Carol and the End of the World. Will be a fun, crazy show. Dan Guterman created it and wrote it, but we executed it during the pandemic and working on a Have a Good Trip 2 currently right now. We're shooting interviews. Been talking to everyone from Wiz Khalifa to Melissa Etheridge just about their psychedelic experience. So keep an eye out for that.
I got stories.
Oh, great. You're in.
What's up? Oh, man. This is pretty funny. What am I doing? I'm off to like March. I'm just chilling right now.
Nice. And then you shoot more. Which specifically? Which show?
Holiday Baking Championship, and then Spring Baking, then Summer Baking, then Kids Baking, then Elf on the Shelf, then the Halloween Cookie Challenge.
I mean, what are we doing? This is crazy. Right? That's like you help? Sound like you need help. We're available.
it's a lot of fun. It really is. I mean, think about it. I get to eat cookies and tell people what I think. Like, that's literally my job.
Yeah.
This is what I think of this cookie.
Great
and
job.
I'm loquacious. I'm good at it.
Great job.
All right. And gentlemen, that was Restaurant Fiction. Guys, gals, that was Restaurant Fiction. Thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure, and thank you for – it was just awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Great job.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
What's that? Huzzah. Yeah, we're watching The Great.
Oh, fucking dude, huzzah for me.
Yeah, fucking huzzah.
Well, holy fucking shit. Was that awesome or what? Thank you, thank you, thank you to all of our guests. Richard, Donick, Duff. All of you, my friends, are invited back each and every time, anytime. I mean, it was a sensational panel. I mean, I was just actually even rewatching the footage, and every single guest had their time to speak, had their time to say what they wanted to say. No one was ignored. And I just feel that there was a real mesh. There was a real chemistry between all three of these amazing individuals. Thank you to the people who attended our live panel at actual room 402A this last weekend. And thank you, obviously, to the listeners, to you who are listening right now. All right. So anyway, if you liked what you heard, well, guess what? You found us. You found us on YouTube. You found us to wherever you're listening. So wherever you actually streamed Restaurant Fiction, at least this episode, there's over 90 more as we gear up for our 100th episode in 2024, where we are bringing on more celebrity chefs, more showrunners to some of the hit shows on streaming and regular networks, and even directors and film directors, etc., etc. We are just only growing, only evolving. And you, my friends, yeah, that's right. You're listening, so you are my friends. I mean, you get a front row seat, you get a backstage seat, you get that courtside seat. So buckle in. All right, until next time, which is probably going to be 2024, because we are closing out this bad boy of an episode of 2023. Keep it real, keep it fresh, and always keep on the flip side.
Cut to. Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant? Bar.
Club.
Day.
Night.
Hey.